Do you have repair projects that you've been putting off, whether it's basement waterproofing, concrete raising, structural repairs, or attic insulation? PermaSeal provides quality work and free inspections. Don't wait. Call PermaSeal 800-421-7325 or permaseal.net.
Good evening, Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine. How are you doing, Rod?
I'm very good. How are you, Mr. Landecker?
I'm very, very fine. I'm looking forward to our conversation tonight. The Martian from 2015, and Robinson Crusoe on Mars, 1964.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we had even seen a picture of Mars other than a telescope.
You're talking about the 64 movie?
Yeah. We had no idea what was going on, but we'll talk about that.
Really?
Yeah.
There had been no pictures of Mars in 1964.
There had been pictures taken through telescopes of a fuzzy red dot, but in terms of actually seeing what it looked like, that didn't happen until the next year. So they guessed pretty well.
In Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
Yeah.
The various, let's call them scientific experiments by the astronaut to survive.
Yeah.
Would any of that be like actually have real science aspects to it?
That's a really good question. And they tried. And the posters, if you remember them as I do, because I'm old, said scientifically accurate across the top. Right. And they tried. You know, now the first half of the movie is good for what they knew. The second half kind of goes off the rails. We'll talk about why. But at that time, they thought that Mars might have about the atmospheric density of being up on Mount Everest, so you might need an oxygen tank, but you could walk around in shirt sleeves. That turned out to be wrong. They didn't know about the poisonous perchlorate in the rocks and the soil, so that turned out to be wrong. So there's a lot of things they didn't know. There were no canals. There certainly weren't fireballs driving back and forth like being on a freeway. But otherwise, you know, they really tried, and the spacecraft kind of made sense, and the whole flyby thing kind of made sense. The big tinfoil disco ball meteor didn't make a lot of sense, but you had to have, you know, you have to have that inciting event to get things rolling. So in that movie, it was the meteor forcing them to land when they were just planning a flyby. And in The Martian in 2015, it was, ooh, big dust storm coming. The spaceship's going to tip over, which was wrong.
They were already on Mars in The Martian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, they had the chief scientist at NASA as their science advisor. And they showed him the script, a guy named Jim Green, good friend. And he said, you know, a dust storm, the Martian atmosphere is so thin that dust storm would probably ruffle a piece of typing paper.
See, this is exactly This is exactly what I was talking about before or the top of the hour. We'd get Ron on to talk about a movie, and he has so much information about the real science of it that he'll just, you know, oh, by the way, you know, I was talking to a NASA engineer, and he said, and I'm like, how do I deal with that? Now, I hope I got the right clip here. So on Mars, Robinson Crusoe. Oh, by the way, he is down there with a monkey.
Mona the Woolly Monkey. She's in the credits. Yeah.
Why is the Mona the Woolly Monkey included?
That is never discussed. There is, I think there's one line with Adam West, who's his companion astronaut, who does not make it once they land. But yes, we had Batman on Mars in a few pieces. And he says, as I recall, something about, I think we've learned all we need about zero gravity with you, Mona, and that's it. And the rest of the time, she's just kind of like comic relief and various plot elements.
So both of these movies, the astronauts need to survive. I'm going to play you a clip and tell me if there's any, if it's legit.
I found an answer that saved my life temporarily. These yellow stones that burn like coal. I've been wondering about this a lot. Where do they get the oxygen to burn? It must be similar to solid rocket fuel with its own built-in oxygen. Heat and flame release it. It's breathable. I've got to find some way to store it.
Is that true?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, solid rocket fuel?
Solid rocket fuel is closer to fertilizer than it is to sulfuric rocks. No, it really is. I mean, you know, it's it's made from some of the same kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm not a chemist, so I can't say that it's not. Right. I remember as a kid thinking, well, that's kind of cool. But then later, not to, you know, have too many spoilers, but later on, somebody gives him a handful of oxygen pills, which are actually orange M&Ms, as it turns out, because that movie had a very low budget. And so that makes it all the better. But I do remember as a kid thinking, that's not scientific. What do I know?
On Mars. This film is scientifically authentic. It is only one step ahead of present reality. A whole new universe of adventure is about to open for you. Truly a science fact story. Tomorrow come to life today. Or not.
So can I make a quick point?
Yeah, of course.
So The Martian was shot in 2015 for $108 million, and it made, I think, something like $650 million worldwide. So it was a great success. Robinson Crusoe on Mars had a budget of $1.5 million, or in 2015 dollars, about $12 million.
Ooh.
And while it was a box office disappointment, you could see they were working overtime just to get the thing done. So given that,
yeah,
I thought when you look at the two of them side by side, wasn't bad.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, I have to be honest. When we first announced the titles, I'm like, come on, Robinson Crusoe on Mars, that has got to be the worst movie ever. I had never seen it. I was saying that already. So I start watching it. I started to watch it, I don't know how many times, four, five, and I could only get so far. And, you know, I'm like, it's got all these over-the-top colors of not only of rocks and just everything and crazy monkeys and bizarre aliens. But, you know, I finally got through it and I said, well, you know, that does have some parallels with The Martian. Obviously, both movies have stranded astronauts on Mars. I mean, right there, right off the get-go, you've got a big similarity going. What others do you think?
Well, so Robinson Crusoe was shot in Death Valley, and of course, always a big challenge to shoot anything like that in the continental United States and not have plants. So somebody had to go out. I mean, they were at Zabriskie Point, so that's pretty bleak anyway. I imagine some poor PA. I was a production assistant for years. We were always, you know, the bottom of the heap.
Yeah.
Some poor PA got beaten to death in 110 degrees of heat and had to go out and pull up plants. The Martian was shot in Jordan, right next to where they shot some of the Star Wars movies. And that's already pretty bleak. So they had an easier time. But, you know, one thing that occurred to me, and it's true with The Martian and Robinson Crusoe, I worked in TV commercials for about 15 years. And anytime we shot on a beach or a desert, you got to be aware of footprints.
Sure.
And there's crews walking around and the producers, you know, walking over with the usually young woman he's towing around, going to the craft service table. And there's footprints everywhere, right? So you either have to keep changing where you're shooting, which in the sand isn't necessarily that hard, but the actor's got to be walking across it for the first time in every shot. And I thought, holy Moses, this must have been difficult, especially when you had next to no money and you got, you know, Paul Mantee, the lead in Robinson Crusoe, in his skin-tight T-shirt looking all ripped and everything, stumbling around on probably a fairly warm day. So I thought, you know, all in all, given what they were up against,
right? Yeah,
it's pretty convincing right up to the point that you see the bad guy aliens land in spacesuits that were from I think it was the Paramount prop department or Columbia, I forget which. They were spacesuits from Destination Moon, which had been made about 15 years before.
Oh my God.
And they look like the guy down the street on his barbecue, you know, it didn't even try. But, you know, other than that, I thought it was darn good, and it gets a little silly towards the end, but I really enjoyed it.
Yes. And, you know, I'll backtrack and repeat what I said. I tried to start it. I don't know how many times. Once I got through it, it was okay. Although I'm still not over that ridiculous monkey. I just don't understand.
Boy, you really got a problem with Mona.
I got a problem with Mona. Not Mona herself. I don't I'm not.
You're not simian-phobic. Yeah.
That's right. That's absolutely right. I don't know how Mona identifies, or you know, but I'm just saying. Why is she there? She has her own space suit, right?
And well, she has her own space suit, but you notice there's nothing. No visor on the helmet.
Well,
she just has a helmet.
Well, half the time they're just breathing the quote-unquote Martian air without any visor on at all.
Well, so he's, you know, in the first part of the movie, Robinson Crusoe is, or what was his name, Drake or something, is wandering around with an oxygen tank until he runs out of oxygen. And then, as you point out, he discovers the burning rocks, and then he gets the oxygen pills.
Yeah.
The idea was that because Mona was smaller, she didn't need as much oxygen. Yeah. But, you know, the Martian atmosphere, as it turns out, and again, 1965, Mariner 4 flies by, first spacecraft to fly by Mars, takes 22 photographs and shoots its radio beam through the atmosphere as it's crossing behind the planet. So they finally got an idea of how dense it wasn't. And it turns out, instead of being the density of what the atmosphere would be on Mount Everest, which is about 5.5 miles high, it was more like the density at 116,000 feet, which is about four times as high as jet airliners fly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty slim pickings.
Yeah. And that was Robinson Crusoe. What about the other movie? I mean, that seemed to be a vast expanse of something. Was that for real? Was that special effects? I mean, it was 2014. They had a lot of different ways they could have done that.
You're talking about Mars itself?
I'm talking about the movie, The Martian.
Yeah, but I mean, when you say
Mars
how they could
itself.
Do it, you mean the,
yeah.
My understanding is that most of it was just organic shots of Jordan. They might have done some effects work on the sky. I did read that the weightless sequences in the spaceship that drops them off and then fails to pick him up because everybody else then comes back to get him, all the weightless stuff was done with wire, not like they did in Apollo 13 where they actually flew in the Vomit Comet and, you know, did those zero-G parabolas. They didn't have the budget for that. It was too big in any case. So I thought for wire it was pretty good. And then you got to go in digitally and paint them out and all that.
Right, which they
but
can
yeah,
do easily.
I think the landscape was pretty much what you see is what you got, you know.
Well, I thought it was pretty convincing. I mean,
yeah,
is there agreement that Mars used to have an atmosphere, or is that still open to debate?
Well, there's a general consensus. We're pretty sure that it had a lot of water because everything that they're finding up there, and in fact, recently both Curiosity and Perseverance rovers found some more rocks that show, you know, evidence of water interaction. So it's pretty conclusive. The best guess is there was enough water to cover the whole planet to a certain depth, anywhere from, I've read, a few dozen feet to 300 feet. But that's a lot of water for a planet that size. And that most of it froze down under the surface, and a lot of it was sublimed off, which is what happens when you have a near vacuum, because Mars wasn't able to keep its atmosphere because it doesn't have the kind of magnetic field Earth does. And so the atmosphere got blown away by solar wind.
But
they had a lot of water.
Of course, I don't understand a word you're saying, but I'm sure it's very good.
But I do.
It was wet. So actually, the argument is kind of interesting. So I was working at Caltech in 2015, the year the Martian was made, and we got this memo from NASA that was like 15 pages, and they handed it out to everybody. I said, what's this? NASA memos are usually like a page and a half. It was how to deal with the Martian when speaking to the media. There's all this stuff in it. One thing they wanted to make sure that we hit if we were talking or writing for the press was that there's still uncertainty whether Mars was cold or warm back at the time that it had an atmosphere. And that's very important to geophysicists and
planetary
scientists.
I just got this in. Mars is under a tornado watch until 10 o'clock tonight.
I was going to say, you know, their storms are nothing compared to what you guys are going through. Holy moly.
Really?
Well, yeah, because, you know, it may blow at 100 miles an hour, but there's hardly any air. And you know, one very small thing that bothered me about the Martian is those shots during the storm when they're inside the spacecraft, they're looking outside, they had all these chunks of gravel flying by.
Yeah.
And it's like, hold on a second. With that atmosphere, you'd barely be able to lift dust. You're not going to
There's no wind.
Yeah,
minor it's not detail. Like
you're in a gunfight with gravel, you know. But I mean, overall, I thought that I had seen it when it came out, and I thought, yeah, it's okay. Seeing it again and not comparing it to Robinson Crusoe in my mind, because I strove very hard to set them apart, I thought it was really good. And one thing that really stood out, and this is the geek in me, is when Matt Damon finds the Pathfinder rover.
Yes.
And that was very well constructed, looked just like the real thing. I asked the guy that designed it, I said, was that real? And he said, yeah, it was one-to-one effort. Mm-hmm. When he finds that and he's trying to figure out how to communicate with home, and he starts working in hexadecimal, which is this weird, makes your brain hurt and your eyes bleed kind of coding for computers that is in base 8 numbers.
Once again, I got to take a break for the news and write all that down or play back on tape.
Okay.
So I can understand what the hell's being said. It's the bottom of the hour. We're going to do more with Rod, but right now it's the bottom of the hour. Time to get into the WGN newsroom. That's not the NBC chimes on acid. 720 WGN. That's actually the beginning theme from The Martian, one of the films that Rod Pyle and I are talking about this hour, that one with Matt Damon. So here we are once again. Now we have Matt Damon stranded on Mars. Everything, he's going to be there for really, 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 really a long time.
Yeah, like what was it, 600, 700 days?
At least.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Now, I'm going to play you another clip, and I want to know if any of this could actually work.
Okay.
The problem is water. I have created 126 square meters of soil, but every cubic meter of soil requires 40 liters of water to be farmable. So I got to make a lot more water. The good thing is I know the recipe. You take hydrogen, you add oxygen, you burn. Now, I have hundreds of liters of unused hydrazine at the NDV. If I run the hydrazine over an iridium catalyst, it'll separate into N2 and H2. And then if I just direct the hydrogen into a small area and burn it.
Yeah. I thought of you when I heard that, Rod.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
He's right. So Andy Weir, who wrote this book, was a fanatic about getting it right, researched 3 years before he wrote this book as fan fiction. It was only picked up as a published book later. So hydrazine is the same stuff that they used to use in Gemini and the Apollo program for their fuel cells, as I recall. And the net result of the – oh, no, sorry. It was hydrogen, liquid oxygen. So it's one step removed from hydrazine. But the net result was that the fuel cells gave them electricity and water, drinkable water. So what he did would work. They did show the dangers of playing with matches in a high-oxygen environment.
Yeah, they did. Yep.
Very graphically. But at least in theory, it would work. What was not quite so on the money was all that soil spread out for the potatoes, because as far as we can tell from the evaluations of the rovers and the chemistry labs they carry, Mars soil is very oxidizing. It's filled with a chemical called perchlorate. And if you had that much of it spread out and there was any dust in the air, which of course is going to happen if you're digging or walking, your eyes would inflame closed. Your mouth would start kind of turning inside out and getting all puffed up. I mean, it's very bad for you. And breathing, it's toxic. So the prevailing thought is you can wash that dirt, that Martian dirt, and clean out enough of those chemicals to make it happen. But, you know, you got to skip that step because it's a movie and it gets boring if you're sitting there watching them wash all that dirt. I did want to mention one other thing, by the way.
Go ahead.
When they go down to Johnson Space Center and JPL in the movie The Martian, they don't look anything like that. They, you know, these were built with tax dollars back in the 50s and 60s, and they were done fairly efficiently, and very little upkeep other than absolutely necessary stuff is done because NASA's budget is very small and tax dollars are precious. So you go to either place and, you know, they look kind of like a worn out office park from the 60s or 70s. They don't have those cool interiors that were shot in a studio in Hungary. And the exterior, at least the Johnson Space Center, was something called the Balna Event Center in Hungary. So that thing with the big arching tusks and all the metalwork and all that. Yeah. Nah, there's nothing like that. You drive into JSC and it's, you know, it's like driving into a shopping center in Burbank or something. It's kind of, oh, okay, this is where it is, where it happens. Huh? So I that was funny.
The whole thing of the Martian, the rescue of Matt Damon with his former crew in the vessel that he was in originally.
Right.
None of that could happen, right?
Well,
I mean, so you can't puncture a hole in your space suit and then use it sort of hold on a second.
Okay. David?
Oh, I thought I heard David come in there. Never mind. And use it sort of like air coming out of a balloon, you know, to sort of send it in different directions.
Well, so
it would get real cold.
Yeah.
It would freeze and it would never work again.
Well, okay. So, so first we've got the Mars ascent vehicle, which he salvages to take off to rendezvous. Right. And he's got to get it just right because the big spaceship is just flying past Mars and it's going to loop around and go home. So you got one shot. So, you know, if you did it perfectly and all the math worked out, that could work. Dismantling it, that got a little edgy, you know, but again, the atmosphere is very thin, so you could probably fly. You get batted around quite a bit in there by what air there is, but that would probably work. So once he gets up there and he's looking for a way to jet over, you know, to get closer to the big ship, I was thinking about it. Now, any propulsion is going to eventually move him. Probably not at that speed because the pressure in a spacesuit is pretty low. It's like 5 psi, and the sea level is like closer to 15 psi. But if you cranked up your oxygen supply and then ripped a hole in your glove and could hold it in the right direction, I think what got me was you'd kind of be flying around like a balloon that you blew up and let go of, right?
Exactly.
But if you could actually hold it, and they could have directed that a little better, maybe, but if you could like brace it somehow and hold it in just the right direction and not deviate by more than a degree or two, it would eventually get you there. I just think it would take longer. But again, it's a movie. We don't want to watch them take 5 minutes to go over the spaceship, right? It's got to be dramatic.
It was so dramatic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're going to do more with Rod Pyle when we come back on 720 WGN. Right there.
Yeah.
Right there, Mona the Monkey makes her appearance.
Okay.
Mars.
Now let's give Mona a break. So up until the time he gets going with, you know, his love interest, Mona, or whatever she was. Up until that time, he's talking in that 8-track recorder he's lugging around, right?
Oh, wait a minute. I meant to bring this up. This is only going to... Only radio geeks will get this. He uses an actual cart machine.
Right.
I mean, an actual cart. I can't explain it to anybody who wasn't in radio years ago, but I'm like, I'm freaking out. Look at that. Right. It's a cart. He's using a cart, which is
it was kind of like an 8-track, right?
Well, only it was a single track, and it was used by radio stations to play everything. They put commercials on them, jingles on them, music on them. They had cart machines. And just to see it, this antiquated device come popping up on Robinson Crusoe on Mars, it was like, hey, look at that.
But think about it. In 1965, having a cart machine that compact and portable with a battery is probably a big thing. But, you know, up until that point in the movie, he's talking into the microphone. And, you know, back in the 60s, you hadn't had a lot of experimentation in movies yet. They were still kind of, in general, studio style. So I suspect it was partly a device to have somebody to talk to besides himself.
Of course.
Probably getting kind of tiring. Yeah. But, yeah, Mona's really irritating after a while, and she's stealing his food and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And then Friday, the alien shows up, and Mona sort of disappears.
That's another thing. He names the alien Friday.
Right. Well,
I mean, of course, that's what it was in the original Robinson Crusoe. But why would he name him Friday on Mars? I mean,
well, I would have named him Eric because, because when you look at Friday and all the stuff about him, it's got this big Egyptian vibe, right?
Yes, indeed.
Pretty clearly drew from that. 3 years after this movie was released, Eric Von Daniken releases a book he's been working on for a few years called Chariots of the Gods, which has a lot of this ancient aliens, Egypt stuff in it.
Absolutely.
Yes, great. And I wonder, I cannot find anything that links those two, but you got to wonder if either the screenwriters, you know, got some whiff of what Von Daniken was talking about, or if Von Daniken saw this movie and said, hey, I can make this into a best-selling book, and off we go. So I kind of wonder.
Okay, now I have something very current, but still about Mars. A few days ago, what is today, Thursday? I think it was maybe late last week, or maybe early this week. Elon Musk made a statement that the sun is going to destroy the Earth, and therefore we need to go to Mars.
So, in billions of years, or at least hundreds of billions.
I mean, he was serious. This is an actual statement.
He is right, and this is that guy Jim Green I told you about, the former chief scientist at NASA, and I are working on a project together about planetary evolution. Briefly, he's the brains; I'm just the I type. But as the sun expands, as it ages, Earth will get hotter and hotter. Eventually, it'll be more like Venus than like Earth, and at that point, somewhere in that time scale, speaking very broadly, Mars becomes more like Earth because it heats up and the water is released out of the soil and the poles and the atmosphere become denser. It still won't have a magnetic field, but at least for a period of time, it'll have an atmosphere. But what Elon forgot to mention is that then a certain number of millions of years after that, the sun keeps expanding and Mars gets wiped out and you got to go live on the asteroids or on a moon over Jupiter and so on. So, the sun is eventually going to subsume the entire habitable zone.
But that's how many years will that take?
A lot.
A lot. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. There's a lot of motion picture revenues between now and the hundreds of millions of years that we have to worry about that. Is a number out there, but I can't remember.
Not only that, but the logistics of, we're starting, you want to colonize or the population of the world, because it's going to be destroyed by the sun, to go to Mars.
And Elon. He's going to be taking his rich friends. So this is where you get a whole conversation about, space settlement moving off Earth. It's a great idea. There's a lot of reasons to do it. There are a lot of resources out there. It lessens the burden on our planet, so on and so forth. Jeff Bezos talks about this too. But it's going to be hard to get the other 99.9% of us all that interested in it when only the fraction of a 1% get to go for an awful long time because they've either got the money or they're critically intelligent people or they're like you, an entertainer who can keep people psychologically adjusted while they're up there. Well, somebody's got to talk to the folks like us, but I will be left behind because they'll say, we don't need a writer. We have AI, go away. So, that one's a little tougher.
Yeah, but I'm just also, referring to the very nuts and bolts of actually being able to get to Mars, number one, because that's never happened. And then you have the idea of building whatever needs to be built, right, to get there. And then once there, you need to, it's just like every time I get that far in my mind, I'm like, why am I even talking about this?
I mean, okay, I've got a weird one for you. So I just wrote an article that was based on an interview I did on my podcast, This Week in Space, available everywhere, where we interviewed a woman from the NASA Ames Research Center who's been working on, go ahead and laugh, on mushroom habitats.
Okay.
So it turns out when you pick a mushroom, that's just the fruit of a very large structure of fibers called mycelium.
Yes.
And if you take that block of mycelium and grow it in a structured container, it's very dense. It's kind of like wood. And so you can actually take the the core of this stuff to Mars with you, all dried out, so it doesn't weigh much of anything. Once there, you reintroduce water, it grows, and you can actually grow bricks and create structures out of that you can then cover with soil, and now you're radiation proof and you can get by. Now, it's still going to be a crummy lifestyle because you can't go outside without getting whacked with radiation, so you're going to be living under a lot of dirt or in a cave, but, you know, if it's survival, I guess it'd be okay. I just don't know, you know, living a life where you're either in some kind of a can or a mushroom or wherever you're living, and you have no view of anything until you go outside, and then you're always separated from your environment with a faceplate. Yeah. I think a lot of folks who are excited about this underestimate how hard that would be.
Oh, I can't believe that they don't understand that. I'm way down on the, what do you know about Mars, really scientifically, John? Oh, nothing. But I know
all the things that you can't do when you're in a spacesuit.
But I'm telling you. I mean, I know enough that that is a ridiculous, in reality, statement. It just is. I mean, you can't take everybody on Earth and slap them on to Mars. I mean, maybe, oh God, don't even go down that rabbit hole. Listen. Well,
I think it takes special people to do that kind of stuff. I mean, imagine being an astronaut on an 8-hour spacewalk and you got a little floater. You got a booger in your right nostril. You're driving you nuts. You can't do anything until you get back inside the ship, right?
That's right.
Or sweat gets in your right eye and starts to pool up, or whatever the case may be.
Or something of a more olfactory nature.
Well, you can
go back.
You know, it's like there's nowhere for that thing to go.
Go back to Martian, and they save it and use it for fertilizer. Right. Seriously. Right. Thanks. We're out of time, and I thank you again and look forward to the next time. Thanks.
All right, sir. Take care.
Ron Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine.